webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Hello, this is Daniel Rouse. Would you welcome with me again the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams?
Well, thank you, Daniel Thomas Rouse, and thank you guys for the welcome, and welcome to you that are listening to this powerful PowerCast. We're learning so much so fast, and there's that little TV show called Ridiculousness, and it's just the most unexpected, crazy, stupid things happening, and it's almost like we need to title the show Ridiculousness, because this is ridiculousness that we are falling headlong. You enter into something that you think it's going to take you one or two sessions, and you're on it for 50. And still affecting everything that we say and understand because of the strength and the power of the 1,000-year reign. And it's just, its validity is so ironclad. It has resolved so much for us. And now we have gone into another area of research here. But it is the 1,000-year reign that once again shows us the perspective as to the reality of this scepter, this reign. What a shock, Daniel, from that we got in the show just before the show last week when we were trying to look at this thing and about God being able to count.
Yeah. I think it's thinking of Sesame Street. One stinky, inky, inky, two stinky, inky, of course, I'm the one with I'm the dad here, little girls. Yeah. What an incredible journey. I mean, to look at that and see, I mean, there was some confusion there. We divorced 10 tribes, but he gave it all to one. And then Benjamin kind of just fell by the wayside, and this representation of Levi, what happened to them?
The God who could not count. And if you left it to Christianity, they would be fine with that because everything is so ambiguous. They take every statement that God has ever made in the Hebrew scriptures, or even what Christ said. And it is spiritualized. It's, flufficized. There's a
flufficized.
Flufficized. I like that. and we don't need to flufficize anything, but I'm telling you, we just keep opening these doors, and it's just ridiculousness as to what comes pouring out at us. You would expect to open a closet and find things hanging up in place. We open up a closet and get knocked back to the other wall from things coming, springing out of it. So we are still on that, and it's just happened to us again. That segment that we did is one of the more important things that you'll ever learn to understand the prophetic line of the promise. Folks, we've gone through such a wonderful understanding. Do you realize that us being able to understand that it was the promise, not the promises? Do you remember how intricately we went through and dismantled all of this sideshow stuff that has absolutely just demolished the ability to understand the word whatsoever? And all these promises. Do you know everything in the Word of Faith movement? Well, I don't know of a Christian denomination that's not based on standing on the promises of God, my Savior. I learned that one in the Baptist church. Standing on the promises of God. And so an entire misalignment of spiritual identity and understanding was established, and the attempts to perform that out instead of understanding the promise, which is righteousness and righteousness alone, we've got people pursuing promises and forgetting about righteousness, because the reason you don't have your promises is because of your righteousness.
Yeah.
Or your unrighteousness, or your works, or your deeds, or your sins, or your unequally yoked. Oh my gosh. The list just goes on and on, and all for one purpose: to obtain the promises of God. And thanks for playing. But there are no promises of God. There was one promise and we followed it. Goodness, it's just been amazing. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, through David. And then we see this spiritual lineage coming right straight down through David. It goes from David to Christ, then taking up his seat at the right hand of the throne of the Father when David is anointed. And that takes us straight to the cross, where that the fulfillment of the promise of God went to the whole world. And now we can take up the offering and go home, right?
Yeah, it's exactly right. You know, and as you talked about the promise, which is righteousness, when we went through the thousand-year reign of Christ and we talked about the scepter, it was the scepter of righteousness is what it was. And so, again, we have the promise and the scepter. What was that scepter? Yeah. It was the promise of righteousness.
Yeah, and so what has become a terrible miss, just as much as there has been religiosity developed around the promises of God and not knowing the promise of God, you know, not knowing anything about this promise and the lineage of the promise and the finishing and the bestowal of that promise upon all people and how he got it to all people, starting out with a chosen people who got divorced. That divorce is the best thing that ever happened to the world.
Yeah.
So we've got a chapter in Exodus. We're going to go through Exodus chapter 3.
Yeah. I wanted to mention one thing here while we're talking about this one tribe. You sent a verse to me earlier today, Michael, and it was Jeremiah 3:11. And it said, "Then the Lord said to me, backslidden Israel has shown herself more righteous than treacherous Judah." So as we looked at this, we understood that Jesus was the Lion of the tribe of Judah. We know that David was out of the tribe of Judah. But the point was, is that that tribe, because that's what we earlier thought, that there was one tribe that was saved. And it was this mixture of Judah and Benjamin and Levite. But it's not even about that. I mean, you see that even as Israel, these divorced tribes, that the singular tribe, Judah, was worse off. But yet out of that came something that was better. Out of that came the line of the tribe of Judah. Out of that came King David.
Yes. And that was a spiritual line, not a family line. So we were not dealing with a particular line or tribe. And that's where this got us a little bit tricky, but also in its trickiness, it got incredibly revealing. I was just blown away, Daniel, when we read into this And I remember as we were reading through it, I said, well, let's look at the word tribe. What in the world does the word tribe mean? And that was where this just, that's when we opened the door to the closet. I mean, it's like, and we were pinned against the wall on the other side of the room. It just came cascading out in volumes that were more than we ever expected. I mean, we were only looking up the definition of a word. And then all of a sudden, it is within that word is a word that is defined by its where it is in context. Context, context, context. If we find context, you don't. I'd see, I remember finding Hebrew and Greek words when I was a teacher in the Word of Faith movement. And then I would find the definition of that word and then build a whole teaching on the definition of the word, regardless of the context. In fact, I changed the context to fit the definition. I did it just the reverse. And if you listen to these guys, that's what they all do. Carlton Pearson was a majesty at this reversal understanding of how to research the scriptures. Context, taking a word, finding out that, oh, well, this word means this here, so let's spread it all over the place and make it say everything that every place that it's used, it means this. And that's not true. Anytime you hear us do the context of a word, we're going to tell you that in what places it means that. And we allow the context always to define the word instead of allowing the Greek or Hebrew word to define the context. I mean, just think of what we would do with the English language and what you could infer and imply people have said. If we decided this word means this, and regardless of context, I mean, just think of how many words are exactly the same sounding and are even written the same, and they can mean many different things. It is always the context that wins out. But when we come to studying the Bible, or studying anything that we want to find confirmation bias in, we will find a definition of a word and then apply it to every place that we can find that the word exists, and make you think, well, that's what the word means, so therefore we change the context. And that's not what we do. We do understand. We do look for the Greek and the Hebrew words and how they started, their etymology. What did they mean when this translation took place, even? But we always let the context speak for itself, and that's what happened. So the context of this word in its context, tribe, suddenly switched from Judah to the throne of David.
Wow. I heard talking about taking words out of context. I remember having a conversation, and it was an end time discussion, antichrist kind of thing. And the guy was sharing with me that I think it was in the Hebrew, there was a word that was like Nashah, like Nashaw or AR, something like that. And he said, see, it's NASA. Oh, Lord. And he said, you know, it's really close to that word. And I'm like, I don't think language works that way. Oh, man.
And you know, there's this whole thing that people think that NASA is, I've just realized, I've known that flat earthers have been around. And if you're a flat earther, we do not make any apologies about insulting you. You just need to be insulted. That's all there is to it. That's just crazy. But they think that NASA is a complete shadow thing. And that all of these things have just been, they'll even tell you things like nobody's ever seen a rocket go up. That it's all made up. Let me tell you, I saw two of them go up myself, standing there across the lake.
Oh, you're delusional, Michael. I know. You're delusional.
I'm a part of the conspiracy. And this gospel I preach was absolute confirmation that I'm a part of the conspiracy. I stood there, folks, on two of the launches. I would like to remember which ones they were. There for a while, there was so many going up. And my trips to Florida were frequent at the time. And there's two times I planned that we were going to stop and see a launch. And there's no way to describe that if anybody that's seen that. I saw one of them from out at sea coming in on.
Oh.
Yeah, it was after dark. They actually did a launch after sunset, after dark. And I was coming in on a cruise, and as the cruise was coming in, they told us that the launch was about to take place, and if you want to see it, go to the upper deck. And we were coming in toward the coast of Florida. I don't know how many miles we were from the coast, but there were a few high clouds, and as we looked at the stood there to see. You know, we couldn't see anything when it first, I think you could see just a little splash of light or something over on the coast. But after it took off, it started climbing, of course, in downrange. The reason it goes in downrange instead of straight up is it's got to find orbit. Sorry, flat earthers, that's why a rocket has to go instead of just straight up and down the way that some of the guys are taking people into this little shallow area of weightlessness. They go straight up and straight down. It's because they're not having to find orbit. The reason that a rocket, something that is going to go in space, has to go down range is it has to reach the orbital circular angle that matches the Earth so that it can go into orbit. So I saw one of those, and the other one was standing there on the lake just across from the launch pad. And that one was incredible because with that one, I stood there, and all of a sudden, when this rocket took off. I'm telling you, we saw the light from it. And then the next thing you felt was just this. We were standing there across this almost, I can't even call it a lake. It was more like a pond. And with some other folks, and I'm telling you, the ground shook. It was everything around us shook. That was really quite an amazing and very powerful thing. So yeah, Daniel, this was quite amazing. And so I've seen this stuff. It's not like I'm sorry I can't join your party. And I do chuckle about you guys, and I know there's a lot of you, and I know that you're absolutely convinced that NASA is a complete shadow puppet, something for somebody. It just seems like that the whole world, even those that would be in competition with NASA, agree that it exists. So I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, that shows you how quickly someone can go off into a tangent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just did it. But this is so vitally important that we get this, you know, when a train is in the switchyard, when they pull that big handle over, I don't care which direction that train was going, it, that just pulling that lever puts it down a different track. And that's exactly what happened with this divorcel. And not only that, but that Judah is worse than the ones divorced. So one would have to say that all of them as tribes of people were divorced. But the lineage of the scepter was saved.
Yeah.
And it was saved through David, which was through the tribe of Judah. And so anytime you see any reference to Jews, of course, that, as Daniel's pointed out, that's always the word Judah in its original form. So, yes, and that, and I get it. I see where that the confusion can come in. But we've got to realize that there is no place where we can ascribe that the people, Judah, that the people have had anything to do with the structure of the spiritual assignment of the promise. It did come through Judah, but that went through David as king, and that went from there into the thousand-year reign of Christ.
Mm. Michael, I am just amazed. I mentioned to you yesterday, I was thinking about, you know, the years I spent at Rhema and the time, the years I put into working on my doctorate degree in theology. And for a while, I was thinking, my God, what a waste of time, you know, just garbage. But you know what it has given me, Michael, is it's given me the ability to know these stories. The problem was, is we didn't put them together.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would understand the bigger picture had I not spent the time to study all of these and go into them. The problem is we just reorganized them and put them into the way that met the dogma of the Word of Faith movement. But as we begin to see the story as it is told by itself, not by adding in or taking away from it, wow, what a beautiful story. And we just look at the past couple years on how this has all come organized, you know, starting off with just trusting in the Hebrew scriptures and God's predestined plan and his predestination and all of that, going into giving a promise to Abraham, and then Paul teaching us that it wasn't for all of the seeds, it was to a singular seed.
Yeah.
And then seeing that stretched out through the thousand-year reign of Christ, good Lord, my God, my mind is, it's having a dance party.
and justifiably so. The structure of this, so what we want to do in the rest of the show, and you got a free detour through NASA today, so a little guided tour. What we want to do, we've shown you the point where that this passed to the scepter passed, not where the people tribe was cast. Yes. There's a difference between the people tribe and the scepter and the rod.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny? All of those things are spoken of. It's translated as the rod, branch, and scepter. If you see the word rod, and it's talking about those prophecies about the Jesus being the rod, or the branch of David, or the scepter, that's all the same word, except they use that same word and translate it as tribe.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they could have done this a little bit better. It seems as though that they should have separated these words. It's almost as though that, kind of like our research in the word world. Remember how in the New Testament we had the word world plastered all over everything and found out that it's three or four different, very clear things. And that's probably the best thing I could say to you to understand this word tribe. For those of you that are experienced with the Gospel Revolution, and the understanding of the term world and how that transformed so much for all of us. That is the very same transformation you can have in understanding the word tribe. So we want to go back before the word, where this intersected, and we want to follow it down to this point now.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, where could we go that would give us a good history of this?
So, remember, we talked last week, I think it was John, I believe it was chapter 8, when Jesus told them, you are not of your father. And then they said to him, well, are you? And he answered and he said, I am. And one of the other researches that we've been doing and teachings that we've been doing is on the name of Christ that was removed from the Hebrew scriptures. And so with that in mind, this I am, the story that comes up, and you mentioned it earlier, was Exodus chapter 3. And this is Moses and the burning bush. And we see all of this, but then we see this connection, this conversion, if you will, of the promise to Abraham, what God is telling Moses as he's taking the people out of Egypt, out of this bondage, and then the future of this scepter. So I'll just read a few verses here. Exodus 3, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Remember that, the mountain of God, because this geographical location will really come in as we lighten up this story a bit. And the angel, capital A, angel of, and this is that YHWH, of the Yahweh.
So of Christ.
Yep. The angel of Christ, and that capital, I think, Michael, you've said that when that capital is, this is showing that this is the Christ, right?
Yes. Well, all of those where it's capital L-O-R-D, but there's many, many more than that.
Yeah. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of the bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn. So when the Lord, again, that same name, the Christ, when the Christ saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, and he said, here I am. Then he said, do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face. He was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord, same name, and the Christ said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and bring them up from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have seen their oppression with the Egyptians and how they oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.
That's a big chapter, big story. And the there was none of this was a surprise, surprise. Maybe it had been a surprise to Moses, a surprise to the people. But when we backed up from here, Daniel, we found the prophecy that he said that your people are going to go into bondage. It's here in this chapter, I suppose. But we checked to see when the prophecy about that bondage that was prophesied, and it was almost 300 years, two to three generations later, before it actually happened, before they went into bondage for 400 years. Can you imagine that? that longer than the United States has been in existence, probably getting close to about the same time. There's some variations here as to what people think the exact dates are, but two to three full generations of time and 200 to 300 years. And the that it would have been foretold that amount of time before that the people were going to go into bondage, not just anywhere, but into Egypt.
Yeah.
And not only that they were going to go there, but they'd be there 400 years.
Mm.
So that what that says is when you read this story, realize that whether you understand it or not, every move that was made, every king, everybody, whenever Pharaoh, the frogs, what they didn't come up with an idea for the frogs or for the water turning to blood on the spot. Well, if he ain't going to do that, we're going to do this. This was not a point-by-point game. This game was settled and planned out and declared three generations before. This is Moses' great-grandchildren that this is happening to. Abraham, I guess.
Yeah, Abraham.
Yeah, Abraham. And that's why we went into the facetiousness about the 12 and the 1. There's 12, I'm divorcing 10, so here I'm keeping 1. That's why we did that little facetious thing about that, because we've gone through and shown you how precise that the Hebrew scriptures are with timing, that it's always exact, and it's always foreknown, it's always foretold. It is also as equally important to know that after that Christ rose from the dead, nothing predestined, it's not that nothing predestined happened, but nothing else was predestined, because Paul's life was predestined before the cross. But by the time all of those lives were through, there's no predestination. And what people have, all of this stuff about the current state of affairs is somehow is God's timeline, God's clock, God's this and that. It's absolutely unbelievable. Daniel, what do you get out of this chapter as we read through it and this progression getting us down to this incredible moment when God made a covenant with these people? He said, I'll make a covenant, and the covenant will result in land.
Yeah, so in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 10, he calls them, come now, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.
Yeah.
So that comes in, and before that, he says, I'm the God of your father, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he's speaking to Moses and saying, okay, so what is the significance of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the children of Israel? Well, I think it's apropos for us to go back to that covenant that God made with Abraham, and then see, because then, like you said, then comes with this promise to Moses, is that I'm going to lead you into this land, this promised land, flowing with milk and honey. Well, the covenant that God made with Abraham also includes that land, and it's very specific as to the land. So we're doing some reading today because I want to read you this story now of Abraham. Mm-hmm. So let's read here in Genesis chapter 15. And this is when God made the covenant with Abram. At the time, he was Abram, and this is before he became Abraham. Verse 1, after these things, the word of the Lord, now this is that Lord, this is that Christ, came to Abram in the vision, saying, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield and your exceedingly great reward. But Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? Then Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one is born in my house, is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord, of the Christ, came to him saying, 'This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look now towards the heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them.' And he said to him, 'So shall your descendants be.' And he believed in the Lord, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. Then he said to them, 'I am the Lord, I am the Christ, I am the Messiah, who brought you out of Ur and of the Chaldeans to give you the land to inherit.' Then he said, 'Lord God, how shall I know I will inherit it?' So he said to him, 'Bring me a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon.' Then he brought all of these, cut them in two down the middle, and placed each piece opposite of the other, but he did not cut the birds into two. When the vultures came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. And when the sun had gone down, a deep sleep fell on Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. Then he said to Abram, 'Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers.'" Here's the prophecy. What'd you say, 300 some years mm-hmm. before what we just read in Exodus. "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them for 400 years.
There you go.
And also the nation whom they serve, I will judge. Afterward, they shall come out with great possession. Now for you, you shall go to your father's place. You shall be buried at a good old age." Is there a good old age, Michael?
Ooh, I haven't found it.
"But in the fourth generation," again, I mean, the specifics of this timeline is incredible. "But in the fourth generation, they shall return here. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. And it came to pass, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and burning torch that passed over those pieces. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant." Here's the covenant. "With Abram, saying, 'To your descendants, I will give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Candomites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Raphaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Jergesites, and the Jebusites.'"
Good job.
Thank you, Michael Sight.
I tell you, you got to add sight to everything, though. Well, the clarity of this, and now that we want to show you why we went into this detail, it's important to know. If we're going to claim that it was this line of a specific nationality or a specific identity of Jewish, which we saw showed you that they were self-identifying as Jewish, it was others who named them Jews, and they, of course, carried that on. But it is true that the promise was going to come through Judah, which was through David. And that's stated very clearly. And it's stated also very clearly the ones that it was not coming through. Jesus made it clear. It didn't include you. Paul made it clear. It didn't include you. No matter what you identify of as, it didn't include you. It did not include you at all. It is not to Abraham and his seeds as of many. I mean, how many ways does they have to say it? You're mad at me because I've identified I'm that person. Yeah. See, what they heard when Jesus said, "I am," they heard him saying that was him who gave that promise to Abraham. Can you imagine? So not only did he say that he was the one who actually gave the promise to Abraham, He's saying, I'm the one that's was assigned to fulfill the promise that was given to Abraham. And it was not to Abraham and to you guys.
Yeah.
It was to Abraham and me.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
Now, if we take the term Jew out or Jewish, you can understand it a little bit better because right. Because that's where people get upset. But you guys have nothing to do with it. Paul mm-hmm. confirmed in his teaching, us guys, I was one of you too. And as one of you, us guys had nothing to do with this.
Mm.
It took me 3 years to figure it out in the desert that we guys had nothing to do with this thing that has happened. This came through David. This came through the scepter, not through the group of people. And as you read that Judah, the tribe of Judah, God, the ones that God divorced, he said that Judah was worse off than the ones he divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to figure something out here, Christians. You can't hang on to both sides of this story. It's either Christ or it includes a nation. Now, let me say this very clearly. If you are spiritualizing any group of people as being spiritually superior or chosen, if you are identifying any nation as spiritually superior or chosen, after the cross, you are embracing you are embracing things that absolutely reject the Christ.
Mm.
These sentiments reject the Christ. These sentiments are the ones that Paul and Jesus fought against the most, is for you to think that those guys had anything to do with it at all.
Mm.
And to be 2,000 years later and saying that these guys are now holding the timepiece, a lot of people think it's the United States too. And I've made my peace about that. Any nation that ties itself to any religion, the religion and the nation are both going to see troubles, to say the least. Has always been, thus always will be. Every single time in world history, this has happened. So the power of seeing, when Christ spoke to him, he said, where you stand is holy ground. That was also prophetic. Mm. Because even though he drawn out all of the land, this is Christ who told him the borders of the promised land. You say, yes, the promised land is the area of Israel. Folks, you've got to understand that there's a great number of people who've read and understand what we just read to you that you don't know that this is their outcome. And their outcome is that the nation, the state nation of Israel, is supposed to occupy all of this territory. Mm. Now, if this state nation of Israel ever occupies all of the territory, you say, well, they've got it now. No, they don't.
Mm-mm.
We've gone in and done some research. So, if this state nation of Israel occupies this land that was just described, what countries would no longer exist anymore, Daniel?
Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Kuwait, the Palestinian territories, sovereign Jordanian custodianship, and even Israel itself.
because Israel, the state nation right now, occupies, and this is, you know, we've got it pretty close, but no more than 3% of that territory.
Mm.
So when you hear people that you don't know what their end game goal is, when they're talking about the restoration of this state nation to its promised borders, this is what they're talking about, folks.
Mm.
Now, that's not everyone, believe me, but there are Christians that this is their number one spiritual goal, is to see Israel, the state nation Israel. I have to say the state nation Israel because it is not the promised nation. They're not the same thing. The state nation Israel and trying to bring back this, these borders. Do you know that Israel, the promised land to the promised people, they have never occupied this territory ever?
Mm.
Why did they not get it? Because they broke the covenant.
Mm-mm-mm.
Now, that was part of the plan, though.
Right.
Because if they break the covenant, and then God takes those people and integrates them with all Gentiles, and then he promises to bring the Israel back someday, and suddenly they're so mixed in with Gentiles, the only thing that he can do is just redeem everybody.
Mm.
It's the only way you're going to get any Jews out of it, any Israelites out of it. He never made these promises to Jews. He made these promises to Israel, to the Israelite people. I know that you may be saying, well, Michael, you're doing semantics. No, we really are not. Because the very last time God called them Israel was when he divorced them.
Mm-hmm.
Very last time.
And he never called them a Jew either.
And he also never used that term in addressing them. So I hardly call that semantic. What the problem is, we've not ignored, it's not that we have not been semantic about this. It's that we've not looked at the picture. We just laid out for you what nobody's probably ever done for you before.
Mm.
We just laid out we didn't lay it out. Christ himself laid it out, folks. He said to Moses, where you stand is holy ground.
Oh, wow.
And we're telling you that was prophetic. Because where you stand today, I don't care where you are. I don't care what you believe. I don't care what you think about anything. Where you stand is holy ground. Now, if we can convince the world that all ground is holy ground and all people are righteous people, boom. The end of war on earth as we know it today.
Mm-mm-mm.
You want to end war? You must accept that holy ground is every square inch of ground. And you must accept that holy people are every human being on earth.
Wow.
That's a whole new world. Mm-hmm. And here we are 2,000 years later, trying to do what? Folks, if you stand with Israel, the state nation, goodness, they are a strong ally of the United States. I'm very glad to have allies of the U.S. Jordan is a very strong ally of the U.S. and has been very strong partners with us in so many things. And we even have a base in Jordan. It's amazing the relationship we have and have had with Jordan. Even this area in Kuwait is occupied by the U.S. We have a base in Kuwait. But that no time has Christ himself gave these dimensions of this promised land.
Mm-hmm.
And it has never been delivered on. So you can't stand back and say that the land that is now there and called by the same name is the fulfillment of that promise. You can't say that. That's like taking the promise of healing and you get 3% of that. What would it be like to be 3% healed? You're still dead. You can still die getting 3% healed. You can still be broke getting 3% of the promises of wealth. Folks, 3%. And the reason this sounds silly is because it is silly. But it's not us being silly. It's the silliness of all of this that we now stand back and watch the world going up in flames. You know, we stated last week about the end of the war. So hey, we can say that we prophesied the end of the world. There's a peace process that seems to be in place. We're all for it. I don't know who's going to have to do what to get where, but something has to be done. Just war upon war and more war and more war. And then you start trying to appease either side and what it is they actually want, either side, especially those on the side that wants all of the promised land for this nation state of Israel to occupy that land. You're going to have to destroy the entire geopolitical structure of the world, the whole world, to accomplish that.
So, Michael, this promised land and the divorce, it was, when people go through divorce, they lose property.
Yeah, you know, boy,
this was a land lost in divorce. Yeah. As you were talking about that, this parable came to my mind, Matthew 13:44, and the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid. And for the joy, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys that field. And what is that field? That's the whole earth.
Yeah.
He gave up a portion.
Yeah.
He gave up. He divorced Israel. Why? So that he could have it all. And it's right there in that covenant that he made with Abraham. I mean, I talk about things being foretold. He said, just look up to the stars. You could go through and you could look at the 12 tribes. You can count that, but you can't count the stars in the sky. Mm-hmm. You can't number them. And that's the covenant that he's making. It wasn't just a covenant that was about 12 tribes. It was a covenant between, and I love that too, Michael, that we see that this is Christ. Because isn't that what Paul teaches us, is that God made a covenant between him and himself.
Yes.
Abraham was just an observer. Mm-hmm. Because what was the covenant? Even though Christ is standing there, he's saying, guess what? Really, the covenant that I'm making is to you and your seed, the singular, and that's me. I'm just here telling you, Abraham, that you're just a vessel, and this is the promise is going to flow through you. But listen, it's me and me. We're doing this, and when it's all said and done, you're going to be able to look up to the stars in heaven and say, that's what my descendants are like.
Yeah, and that completion was made of that promise 2,000 years ago. Christianity's failure to see the cross as the fulfillment of all things, that has been the tragedy of the world. Because see, we have in this understanding at least the tools by which we could work from to find peace on earth.
Mm.
And I'm going to repeat it again. You want peace on earth? You're going to have to make all land holy land, and you're going to have to make all people holy people.
Wow.
And if you're not willing to accept that, there will never be peace on earth. But I can guarantee you this. If you get the world to accept that all people are holy and all land is holy, you will have peace on earth.
Yeah. Mm. You know, we used to judge things by the Holy Ghost goosebumps. I got some Holy Ghost goosebumps. When you're talking about this land that you're, this is holy ground.
Yeah.
Mm. How, Michael, that's such a beautiful, this plan is just so amazing, yeah. So intricate. And my God, we diluted it for so many years, but it's really easy to clearly see this now that we get the mud out of the way.
Yeah. And that all of this was prophesied. I remember that just that one part of the prophecy. He said that the Jebusites or whichever one of them, the Syrians, whatever, it said that their iniquity was not full yet.
Mm, yeah.
So even what, and that was 300 years before they did it.
Yeah. That was the Amorites.
Yeah, the Amorites. Their iniquity's not full yet. So all of these, I've just got so many details to this plan. I'm telling you, you don't understand. The Amalekites have to. Their iniquity has to come up to here. This group over here, their iniquity has to come up to there. This rebellion has to equal that. This has to be, and oh, and by the way, you're going to have five husbands. You're going to have five husbands.
What?
Until the promise is fulfilled.
Hmm.
Ring a bell?
Five husbands.
Anybody in the Bible you know had five husbands?
The one that I'm thinking about is the woman at the well.
The Samaritan woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got some stuff that we're going to have to get into next week, but we're going to let you know just a little bit things you didn't know. Do you know that Samaria was the capital of those 10 banished tribes?
I did not know that.
Did you know that when the woman at the well stood and talked with Jesus as a Samaritan, he said, "You have had five husbands, and the one you have now is not yours"? He was not just talking. I don't know if this woman just had a thing with moving from, maybe she killed them all. I don't know what she did with them. You know, maybe she outlived them or just wore them out. Who knows? I don't know what happened. But Jesus was saying much more than just about that woman, that Samaritan woman, because she was a descendant of the 10 tribes that had mixed with Gentiles. And from the time that they were divorced, there were five different nations that ruled over them.
Get out of here.
She had five husbands. And he said, and the one you have now, which the one she had at the moment, was a kingdom that was combined by Roman and Jewish authorities.
Mm.
Is not yours, but I will give you water to drink that you will never thirst again. If you want to know more about that, we'll talk about it.
Well, I'm on the edge of my seat. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, talk about a tease, Michael.
Wow.
I guess that's next week.
Yeah, I'm not doing another thing.
And so it is. We must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, or try to get Michael to tell you more before next week, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you are listening. Now it's good night from Daniel Rouse in the frozen tundra.
It's good night from Michael Williams right here at Cape Kent. No, not Cape Kent. Right. That's a little further around the curvature of the earth to the south. Anyway, I'm right here, and we really do think about you guys a lot. We appreciate you, and even if you're a flat earther, we will make fun of you, but we're not going to run you off. I'm not going to talk to you about it because I graduated to fifth grade. That's why. Oh, I'm mean, aren't I? It just seems to be a quality of age. I don't. Yeah, I've seen sweet old people though, but folks, that's just not in the cards for me.
You just haven't gotten to that good old age yet, I guess.
All right, guys, thanks.
We sure hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only older.
Since you're knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wildness been knocking from within. You are the love you see, a perfect day you need, right? Gotta be nothing to complete. It's not a thing that you need, you're the love. Just remember to breathe and take a second off. Look, I'm just trying to remind you that you're perfectly divine, flawlessly designed. When you're lost and
deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes, you are listening to
The Gospel Revolution.